Duluth has been suggested as a place that will withstand the challenges of climate change, yet it's been having its share of climate-related issues. Environmental writer Stephanie Hemphill joins us to talk about an article she wrote recently for ENSEA on Duluth's approach to climate change. This is Stephanie Hemphill. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Will. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fine. Thank you for asking me to be on your show. I am so impressed with WTIP.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes,
I recently learned that you were with KUMD for a very long time.
Yeah, I was at KUMD when WTIP got started, and nobody, in my opinion, had any idea how far you guys would have gone, but we should have known. It's a pretty special place up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. We didn't know either, I don't think. Well, I read your article on ENSEA, and it was really interesting, and a phrase that comes up in that a lot is climate haven. So can you tell us what that means and why Duluth was named one?
Right. Well, this started with a guy who came to Duluth to talk from, he's a Harvard researcher, Jesse Keenan. Other people talk about climate havens too, but somehow he got the idea that Duluth and also Buffalo, New York would be climate havens, climate refuges, because, well, obviously they're not on the east or west coast, so they're not going to be subject to ocean rise with climate change. And also, he would call it overbuilt for their population. In other words, the population of Duluth has never grown very much since about 1920 or 1930. So there's the whole city here all laid out with not too many people in it. And then, of course, we're right next to Lake Superior, which is the greatest source of fresh water in the world. So this was his idea that people would want to move here as they were forced away from other places that are getting too hot or getting too, full of water.
And that kind of came up in the article with the woman who runs V-Crib. Was actually, that happened to her, right?
Woman who runs what?
The distillery.
Oh, V-Crib, yes, V-Crib Distillery. Well, yes, one of their employees came from California. He was tired of all the wildfires out there.
Oh, that's right.
But, of course, I mean, we all know that this is a ridiculous idea, because how many people really want to move here? It's cold here, as you know, up there,
mm-hmm.
and the winter lasts too long. And so when he came to speak in Duluth, I think most people were kind of shaking their heads and saying, well, it's an interesting idea. But people are moving to Duluth, I think, more than they were for a while. And, of course, lots of people would love to move to Grand Marais. But there are problems associated with that, as you know. You've got your, limited housing market, and you don't want to get too gentrified and all that. So it's kind of a big question.
Well, talking about climate change, there's been a lot of extreme weather in Duluth in recent years. So what can you tell us about that? And has most of that been attributed to a changing climate?
Well, you know how scientists mostly will not say this particular storm happened because of climate change. But what's happened in Duluth for the last 8 years or so has been very much in line with what we expect to happen with climate change. You know, more water in the atmosphere and hotter temperatures and so on. So it started back in 2012. We had a huge rainstorm, a two-day rain event, which rained up to 10 inches of rain all over Duluth that knocked made all the rivers that flow through Duluth rise up, and they knocked houses off their foundations and made big holes in the roads and so on. And then 4 years later, we had a derecho, as you are familiar with, in the Boundary Waters in 1999. That happened in Duluth in 2016 and knocked down a whole bunch of trees. And then in 2017, 18, and 19, there were big storms that happened both in the spring and in the fall that damaged downtown a lot, with the wind off the lakes and off the lake and flooding in Canal Park. So these were very serious storm events.
So what are some of the ways that Duluth is adjusting to those weather events and the situation?
Well, we're lucky to have a mayor, Emily Larson, who's very proactive and dedicated to doing what she can. She's got a goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050, and they've actually broken that goal down into four-year increments so that they make sure that they stay on track rather than just having it as a goal for way far in the future. And in Duluth, there's a lot of activists, a lot of people who think about this and act on it. We've got the usual clubs, the Sierra Club, the Ikes, and so on. And then citizens just join together in ad hoc groups for specific purposes. They're pushing the city to basically transition away from coal and make the housing much more efficient, make the downtown much more efficient, and they're helping the mayor, as she says, by pushing her in that direction.
And it sounds like some of that's already taken place. I think you mentioned that there was a plant in Duluth that is no longer coal-powered.
Right. They converted the steam plant from coal to gas, and they have the possibility of shifting even farther to more biofuels, but that hasn't happened yet. And they also are doing a big renovation and change in the way that whole system works, and they're shifting some buildings in the downtown from steam, which was produced by this plant, to hot water in a closed loop. So that's much more efficient. Mm-hmm. So that's a big project that they've been involved in at the city for several years, and it's going to make a big difference. Also, they're able to repair the lake walk, which was heavily damaged in these more recent storms. They can use FEMA money to repair it to survive bigger storms. In other words, to build it up to a more robust infrastructure, and it'll enable the system to withstand bigger storms, which we will probably get more of.
And wasn't that going to involve like having some much larger stones kind of along that breakwater area down by the walk?
Oh, my gosh. They're bringing tons and tons of rocks down there this summer. They're rebuilding it this summer. And it's going to be fairly different. You know, it's going to be much more imposing, much more more of a barrier before the water. But I think it'd be well-designed, and they just have to build it up better.
Will people still be able to see the waves hitting the shore and still get a good view of the lake?
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking right now to Stephanie Hemphill. She's an environmental writer who recently had an article for ENSEA on Duluth's approach to climate change. Are there other things that the city or maybe private businesses have been working on?
Right. You mentioned Vicre Distillery, and that's, since I learned about them, they're one of my favorite businesses in Duluth right now. It's a young couple. They make, specialty liquors, and they use a lot of local ingredients. They source as much as they can locally, and that's been their commitment all along. And I just recently learned after the COVID hit that they somehow managed to convert their equipment so that it can just produce plain old alcohol, like, you know, pure alcohol, and people can drive up to their plant there and pick up alcohol to take home as a cleaner. You know, we had
This
concern about it. So they're very, very community-oriented. Other businesses, I was surprised to learn that the two ski shops in town and the clubs that are involved with skiing organized a way to open a cross-country ski trail that's down at the bottom of the mountain, the Spirit Mountain downhill ski hill, and they can make snow. They can, you know, produce snow like these downhill runs do. So when there isn't enough snow for cross-country skiing, they can actually make it for their trail. So that was pretty forward-thinking. And then I talked with that guy since COVID happened recently and asked him how he was doing because, you know, but it's also a bicycle business. So he said business is booming because people are going out to their garages and getting their bikes and getting them fixed and going out on the trails, the bike trails.
Oh, yeah, good socially distant activity there.
Right.
Well, in addition to being a freelance writer, you're a co-editor of an online magazine called Agate. What can you tell us about that?
Well, thank you for asking. This is something that I started with a friend, a person that I didn't know, Lori Ullman, but she's a wonderful poet and knows a lot about nature. And It's an online magazine, which is about nature, science, and conservation in Minnesota and the surrounding Great Lakes states. So it's just online. We have a fairly broad type of story. So I just posted an investigative piece about permitting mines in Minnesota. But we also have poetry, we have photography, book reviews, a real range of topics. And she and I write a lot of the articles, but we're looking for more writers and artists. So I know you've got a lot of creative people up there. Maybe somebody will get interested in writing for us. We recently posted the photos by Travis Novitsky, who's the manager there at Grand Portage State Park. So I think people would find it interesting. Let's see, you're going to ask me how to find it.
How did you know?
But you can't just, you know, Google agate, because then you get things
right
about agates. And it's www.agatemag.com. Agatemag.com.
All right. All one word?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's cool. That's, you know, getting some environmental reporting along with some creative stuff there. That kind of goes hand in hand in my book.
Yeah. It's a real good mix.
Well, we've been talking to Stephanie Hemphill. She's a writer with Northern Minnesota. Just wrote an article for Ensia, and then also has an online magazine called Agate. Is there anything else you want people to know?
No, I'm just honored to be on WTIP. Thank you for talking with me, and let's get through COVID together, right?
Sounds like a plan. I like
Thank
that idea.
You, Will.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah.